Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel, I'm fired up.
I know. You are. What happened? You having a good day? I'm happy for you.
Let me tell you why I'm fired up.
Okay. In a good or a bad way?
In a good way.
Okay.
Let me tell you why I'm fired up. So I'm here at the Conrad Hotel.
Oh, I already know it's nice.
I'm here in the Conrad Wait. Hotel in D.C.
Van.
What?
We've talked about this.
We have to do it.
Why?
We have to do it.
I hate you giving out your location. Fine.
I have to give the people at the Conrad Hotel their props. I am feeling great. Let me tell you what happened. And this is, I want everybody to pay attention for a second. This morning, I wake up. I'm leaving Atlanta. I got to come to D.C. I'm missing the family. I want to get back to Kalik. I want to get back to the dog. And I'm like, God damn, got another city. Got to get up for an event tomorrow. Boom. Got to come back, right? Not feeling so great. I get there. Short flight from Atlanta to D.C. Get there. You know, the car is not there. It's all of this stuff. It's just, it's travel snafus. The first world problems, all of that stuff. Like travel snafus, whatever. But by the time I get there, I'm beaten down. I'm like, yo, I don't even get a chance to take a real nap because as soon as I land, I got to turn around and do the podcast. Boom, 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 boom. Get to the Conrad. I've stayed here before. I stayed here the last time I was here. I come into the room at the Conrad Hotel. It's a great hotel.
Yes.
You know? And I'm looking around the room and I'm like, what's going on in the room? Because I see different pictures that are in the room here at the Conrad Hotel.
Yeah.
This is one of the pictures that I see. I see this picture here at the Conrad Hotel, right? I see it on my nightstand, and then I look over on the table where I'm doing the podcast right now, and I see this picture. And then I look on the TV, another picture of Mountain Lion, another picture of Mountain Lion, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? And I see this note. This note says, welcome to the Conrad Hotel, Washington, D.C., Van Lathan Jr. How do we know you love mountain lions and wolves so much, you ask? The answer is simple. One of us is a Thought Warrior. Have an amazing stay with us, Kiki and the front office team. I would like to give a gigantic shout out to Kiki and the front office team because I was having a tufted, tired day. And I come in here and I'm surrounded by Mountain Lion. They got Mountain Lion in the frame. They frame pictures of Mountain Lion.
Those might be gifts. You should ask Kiki and them if you can take at least one of those home. That is so. I'm fired up.
That was
so nice.
That was so amazing sweet. From the people here at the greatest hotel in the world. Conrad Hotel, Washington, D.C., a.k.a. Mountain Lion Hotel. They have not, you guys, I promise you, I swear, they haven't spent any money with us. This is not an ad. Mm-mm. This is just Thought Warriors doing thoughtful things. And it really, I laughed. You know what I mean? It was funny. It made me relax a little bit. And it was just really a fantastic thing.
That really warms my heart. It almost is making me turn a corner on Mountain Lion because that is really special. And the segment resonates with so many. I love hearing from Thought Warriors in the wild. I heard from a Thought Warrior in the wild the other day.
What?
Who told me that you refer to House of Dragon as Hot D.
Yeah, Hot D.
Also said that they listened to the Ringiverse, obviously, for them to get that reference, which I find hilarious. Never saw it that way until he said that. I am fired up about two things, too, that both have to do with you.
What's up?
Let's just stay on a Van Lathan roll here.
What's wrong?
No, I'm fired up in a good way.
Okay.
One, just happened to be scrolling through Instagram and I saw the trailer for Hip Hop Homicides. Mm-hmm. I got to post it. You guys, 50 Cent posted it. I knew it was going to be good, but it does look really good. It's really cool to see you moving around, doing your thing. Juvenile, wasn't ready for that.
Juvenile's in it, yeah.
Wasn't ready for that. So anyways, just want to give you a shout out because that was pretty cool to see. I wasn't expecting to see that. Also, I love a good crossover. Watching Real Housewives of Salt Lake City last night. And who other popped up on Kikin with the Housewives than your cousin, Big Baby?
What?
I swear. I said, I go, Brian, he was in the room, he wasn't watching. I said, is that Glenn Davis? And sure enough, they had at the bottom, Glenn Davis, AKA Big Baby. He was in
the episode. What the hell is he doing on the Housewives?
Apparently he's friends with one of the husbands. They had a birthday party, but usually those people are in the background. Like he had a Chiron at the bottom. He was hanging out with one, flirting with one, hanging out with two more. He was in the mix. I expect him to see on another episode. Love that crossover.
Hey, Glenn is living his life here in his post NBA life. Big Baby. Shout out to Glenn. Shout out to his dad. Shout out to my dad. But yeah, just fire up. You guys, it doesn't take very much to like do a nice thing. I gotta do more nice things for people. I do, because it's like, think
really
about
thoughtful.
Them. And then, because something happened to me today, like I had to eat bad. I was in the airport, and so I had to go to the airport Chick-fil-A. And the girl at the airport Chick-fil-A was delightfully rude to me. I actually appreciated it because I don't like the cult of Chick-fil-A niceness. I don't dig it. I got up there to get the Chick-fil-A, got a small meal, like little kid's meal just to tide me over. Okay, not trying to go crazy. And I'm like, and she like, what kind of drink you want? I'm like, God damn. I was like, water? And she was like, okay. And I was going to wait where they call your name. And she was like, don't go nowhere. Oh. And I was like, what? What kind of sauce? I'm like, shit. Ranch? She was like, now you could go. And then I went over there and I waited for the stuff. I was like, you know what? Good for you. Good for you, sister. Like, you know, you don't have to, you don't need to be on that my pleasure bullshit. Nigga, take your chicken and go sit your fat ass down and eat it. In shame in front of the whole airport. You know what I mean? I needed that because I wasn't supposed to be eating that. But my pleasure. I wish she would have said, though, you think you need this? Don't you think you need some real
leverage? No. Not after.
What'd you do today, Rachel?
I worked. I had a couple of interviews. Went to the dermatologist. Sat in LA traffic. Came here, you know?
As you say that, I feel like a new bump is like...
Don't touch it, man.
Don't touch the bump. You shouldn't touch it. You're not supposed to touch it.
No, because it's oil. Like, you don't want your dirty hands in the area. No. You got some rubbing alcohol?
No, I'm on the road. So what do I need to do? Put something. Because I'm going
to
have it.
To dry it out. Ask Kiki and them.
Kiki and them will help me. Kiki in the front, the Conrad Hotel. Kiki. All right, guys. This is enough pleasantries. Normally we give you more pleasantries, but we gotta get to the podcast, okay? Because we gotta talk about some stuff that's going on. On the podcast today, we have an incredibly special guest, Jemele Hill, okay? And we want to talk to her a little bit about the discourse around Malika Andrews and how Twitter is going in. It's no quarter for Malika Andrews on Twitter. And like, what is at the root of this? Is it misogyny? Do people feel like she's anti-black? What's the true discussion that needs to be had? And why has the reaction to the Ime Udoka situation become so polarized? We'll talk to Jemele about that in a second. Okay, guys, we told you that we discussed a little bit about the conversation surrounding Malika Andrews, Stephen A. Smith, Ime Udoka, and the response to the entire, I don't know, it's a Twitter bullshit. And the way it's rearing its head on social media, we wanted to bring in somebody who understands that world, who understands navigating it, and who has conquered it. That's why I brought in my sister, Of course, you guys know her, Jemele Hill. She is one of the brightest minds in sports. She hosts the Jemele Hill is Unbothered podcast here on the Spotify network. She hosted Way Down in the Hole, the definitive podcast on The Wire, with myself here on the Ringer Network. And of course, you might know her formerly her time at ESPN. So she understands some of the media spin that can arise from working there. Jemele, how are you doing today?
It's a pleasure to be here with you both. Both who have been guests on Jemele Hill is Unbothered. So it's just a lot of full circle-ness happening right now.
Yes.
I want to get into this with you because obviously you're up on the story. Ime Udoka's having issues big time. He's been suspended for a year, and there's been all kinds of talk around if he should have been suspended. What's going on there? Is it fair? Are people taking it out on him because he's black? This and this and that. And it's led to some discussion at ESPN, you know, notably between Stephen A. Smith, Malika Andrews, and then later on in that same day, Malika Andrews and Kendrick Perkins. And people are coming at Malika Andrews for this, saying that, she treats black men poorly. She is pushing a pro-feminist agenda at ESPN and trying to shut people down. Have you seen this discourse? And can you help us make some sense of it?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely seen it. And I caught some strays because of it. And because, you know, the ashies, as I call them, the ashies and the incels decided that they wanted to either try to weaponize me against Malika or bring up the fact that she is just among a long list of black women at ESPN who hate black men. And it was just disappointing. But more than anything, Van and Rachel, I mean, to be 100% honest, it's hurtful. It's really, really hurtful. It's hurtful because a lot of the people saying that, they don't know how hard it is to get to where a Malika Andrews is, where I am. You know, Malika Andrews is not even 30 years old, and she has her own daily NBA talk show. She was, I believe, like the youngest sideline reporter ever at the NBA Finals. She's just, over the last 2 years, been crushing it. The first woman to host the NBA draft, which she did earlier this year. And it's just amazing to see how quickly this has turned from just disagreeing with her opinion of Ime Udoka, which you are allowed to do. And I have no problem if you want to challenge, you know, her assessment of the situation, or even if you want to challenge the fact that the interim coach she brought in, his past criminal record, she brought that into the conversation. That's fine. But where you lose me is when you start saying things like she hates black men, start posting a photo or photos of the person that she is allegedly dating and using that as an indictment to come after her blackness. We look juvenile and silly by doing that. That's a pointless conversation, by calling her a sellout, a mammy, a bedwinch, all the things that I've been called to. And so that's the part to me that's really, really hurtful. And especially because, and I'm not saying they're the only ones, so that people don't misunderstand me, but especially seeing enough of a disturbing amount of it coming from black men.
Yeah. So were you, and I don't know if it's, were you shocked by this? Maybe not shocked that this happened, but to the level that it went to in such a quick way.
I was very surprised by that, Rachel, to be honest, because, you know, I saw the exchange between her and Stephen A. Smith, and the number of men, and it was largely men. I mean, I'm not saying women didn't say anything too, applauding Stephen A. for putting Malika in her place was right. Like, what are we talking about? You know, it's almost like Malika used to trend on Twitter a lot, like during the draft, during other NBA coverage points, because a lot of dudes were looking at Malika and be like, she's fine and she's knowledgeable, right? Then she was trending for all the right reasons in their mind. But the moment that she voiced a stronger opinion, particularly this kind of issue, then all of a sudden she is a biscuit eater and a bedwinch. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to follow what the train of thought was. The biscuit eater is the one that kills me.
Y'all can't do this.
Every time y'all do the biscuit thing, a biscuit eater. I don't even know what it means. I was like, what does it mean? I was like, I like biscuits. Is that wrong? Like, when did I get biscuit shamed? I don't even understand this.
That is the funniest diss on the internet. Because I'll tell you why. All of my friends have been subject to this, and it's one thing that just, like, it's just something visceral about calling somebody saying that they want Master's butter biscuits. It's hilarious, but it's fucked up. Anyway, I did not mean to.
No, but man, I've been struggling to understand this insult for years. I'm like, okay, Mammy, I get. Aunt Jemima, I get. Bed Wench, I get. I get all of those. But the biscuits? I was like, what did biscuits ever do to anybody except for to be fluffy and delicious? Like, I don't understand why this attack on biscuits. But no, to answer your question, I was really surprised at the ferocity of the attack. And this is what I also want people to understand, is that, like, these debate shows, as you see, they're all over television, in the sports sphere, in the political sphere. People go at it on TV every day. I see dudes calling each other stupid and all these kind of things. Like, they go at each other every day on these shows. Some take it personal, some don't. You know, a lot of times when you're in this debate format, as I know all too well, having been on every debate show practically at ESPN, you might have a heated, passionate discussion. Commercial hit, you joking about something else, right? Mm-hmm. So the people at home are often taking it way more seriously than you are, because at home they're keeping score, like, oh, he sunned her, or oh, she did this. Like, we're not thinking about it this way. This is what we do for a living. So when I saw the exchange, and yes, it was testy. That's what I think that's a fair.
Did you have any issue with the exchange between Stephen A. Smith and Malika Andrews?
You know, I can see both sides of it from this standpoint, is that, yeah, she was certainly strong in her opinion. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. He was strong in his opinion. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. To me, the part that gave me a little pause is him feeling the need to remind her that it's his show. And, I get it. I get it, but don't get it. It's one of those things where I just think, even in the course of a passionate, respectful discussion, even one that gets a little bit heated, it's got to be a certain level of a boundary that is created there. Like, when you try not to embarrass the other person across from you, even if you don't necessarily agree. You know, I remember when Mike and I were doing his and hers, and he would be at SportsCenter, Mike used to talk about one of his pet peeves was when, you know, you're in a back and forth, and it really is just a back and forth, because there's got to be a little bit of volleying going on if you want the debate to be good. And it was one person in particular that was an ESPN personality who, whenever somebody would just try to volley back and forth, he'd be like, wait, let me finish, and hold up his hand. And see, when you do that, is that it signals something different to the audience. Then it comes off a different way, where it's just like, wait, let me do that. Let me finish. Oh, okay. So I just think there's certain things, just from a TV standpoint, that I'm like, eh, whatever. But, I didn't think it was so overly disrespectful that it warranted the reaction that it got in the social media space, where there was just too much of a cheering crowd being happy and excited to see a woman, in particular, a Black woman, you know, 1A, 1 and 1A, being, in their mind, disrespected on television. Like, they were all here for it. And it was just too much cheering. And, you know, I didn't like the reaction at all, because I thought it spoke to how, even now, that whenever a Black woman voices an opinion, it becomes, it just becomes an invitation for the incels and the ashies to get their rocks off by coming forth with their latest, you know, band of ignorant hotepery on 10.
For sure. Did you have a problem with her bringing up
Joe Mazzulla?
Joe Mazzulla. Is it Mazzulla? You know, it's, I'm Mazzulla, bad with names. Yeah. Uh-huh. Joe Mazzulla's past arrest. Do you, because we've I feel like we talked about that on the show before, of a journalist reporting something. I think it was around Kobe when we were talking about it. A journalist reporting something and then having to bring up something that they did that doesn't necessarily have to do with what the topic is, but they're bringing up something from the past. Do you have a problem with the way that she brought that up when she was discussing him taking over in the head coaching role?
Now, Rachel, you're a lawyer by trade, correct?
Correct.
Okay, now somebody's past record, if it applies to the case, you usually probably bring it up. I don't know if criminal defense was, or criminal justice was not your thing, but that's pretty common, right? If it relates to the case.
If it's relevant, yes. If it's relevant.
Mm-hmm. So the question I would pose to everybody else, because the majority of America didn't find out about who this interim coach was until he got put in the position of being interim coach. That means you don't know anything about his past. You don't know anything about his coaching record, anything. Journalism 101 is to explain to people who this is. Now, the other part of this is that he's replacing someone who has had some kind of workplace issue related to a woman in the context of some kind of affair that apparently went south in some kind of way that we still don't know. So the treatment of women is on the table because of what the issue that the Celtics are trying to deal with currently is. And I know a lot of people took issue with it, but that's literally journalism 101. Now, let's just say that Emi Udoka had been suspended for a year for, I don't know, kicking a clown. I don't know. They're just thinking of something else that had nothing to do, you know, maybe a bar fight. Maybe that's what it was, right? Or and maybe a bar fight isn't even the best example because I realized that there's a element of assault with the current coach. But just say something totally not related to this. And I think then it might be a fair question. But because of the subject matter is about treatment of women, because that's what the coach was just suspended a year for, then it is fair game. Look, people don't like it because, listen, the same people that are taking issue with Malika bringing this up have no problem if I go back to Brett Favre cutting somebody off in 11th grade and bringing that all up into to the frame now. You know, see, some of us want it both ways. We only want some people's dirt brought up, but not other people's dirt brought up, right? And it's all, you know, like everybody's talking about, you know, how Brett Favre, I mean, he exposed himself to women in his past. You know, it's part of the general, when you're talking about somebody's character, okay, this is what he used to do. And it's all relevant. So if it's relevant for Brett Favre, why wouldn't it be relevant for somebody else?
So this is what I've, so I actually disagree. And let me tell you why. And I don't disagree in a, like an aggressive way, but this coach hadn't done anything yet. So we're leading with this now. So, like, in Brett Favre's case, I can understand Brett Favre fucking over somebody, and then us going back and going, look at the times that Brett Favre has fucked over people in the past. In this situation, it almost seems as if, and look, there are certain things that you do in life that you can never escape. Like, I tell my younger brother, Big Sean said it in one of his rhymes. It's like, my grandmother told me it only takes one time to fuck up your whole Wikipedia. You know, I tell my little brother, I was like, just make mistakes, but make the right mistakes, because understand that there are certain mistakes that you just cannot live down. And one of them is always going to be in any way putting your hands on a woman. So I'm not going to cry in any way because that was brought up. You know what I mean? It's something that you do, and then you're going to have to answer it for it by two decent people for the rest of your life, the way that it goes. But in this case, the first thing, like, we didn't even meet that guy. We met that aspect of his life before we met anything else about him. And so
I don't know if that's true, man, because I'm going to be honest. Like, I didn't even know about what you're discussing. I mean, in terms of his past, I read about it in a story, and it was not even in the first four or five graphs. Like, I didn't feel like I don't know if the conversation necessarily, I would disagree that it's leading with. I think it's a part of the context of.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if that's the first thing
And she didn't lead with it. When you have to think about how she said it, she talked about him, and then she said, "Just to note," and she added it at the end before she let everybody else talk.
I get that. Just to note, this is how he fucked up in the past. Like, when I say this is the first thing we know about him, I'm not saying that she said that first. What I'm saying is, like, nobody really knew him. And even when I heard that, I was like, okay. Interesting. Now, if you're him somewhere, you might be feeling like, God damn, I just got kicked in my nuts from something. It's like the entire thing. I could see people being like, fuck, you know, and especially just to be real with you. And this, for me, this could be the toxic part of me. It's just, I don't know very many brothers from where I'm from who don't have some sort of past. And I think sometimes what they want, particularly from people in the Black community, is they want second chances. They want opportunities to move forward and prove that they're not the same people they were when they made mistakes in the past. Now, like I said, sometimes you don't always get that. But I think to see if that were somebody who was white who did that, everybody would be like, oh, look at the white person bringing up this, blah, 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 blah. But to see that it was a black woman, I think that some people were like, fuck, why she did him like that?
So let me ask you this. Does it matter to you because of, like, if
Oh, it Joe doesn't matter to me. I just can see.
No. What I'm saying is, like, I do think it is worth noting it because of the situation the Celtics are in. Like, if Joe Mazzulla, if this wasn't related to a violence issue against a woman, like, again, I'll just use the same example. If he got into a bar fight in college, I don't think Malika would have brought that up, to be honest. And I think as a reporter, I probably wouldn't have either. But now
he
on
did,
the table,
by the way. He had an assault charge.
Yeah, he did. I know he did. Yeah, you're right. He did. But it was like two. It was two separate incidents, correct? If I'm not mistaken, y'all can correct me. So maybe bar fight. God, that's right. That's a bad example. But let's just say it was just a bar fight, right? And that was it. And nothing else was on the table. I think I don't know if she would have brought that up, because now what's in public discourse is, how do the Celtics treat women at their organization? Because that's what this Emi Udoka situation has created, is people wondering. They're like, okay, so he's having, apparently, according to reports, a consensual affair. You know, according to one report, he was making unwanted comments about the woman. There's an investigation that takes place. So now people are wondering, well, how are women being treated up in there? And then there was this wider problem of, because of the way this news dropped, every woman who works for the Celtics was suddenly put under enormous scrutiny as being, is this the woman who has to walk around with the Scarlet X? So treatment of women as a conversation is on the table, which is why I think it was mentioned. If he does something totally different in his past, I don't know that has the same content. I don't know that she brings it up. Now, if I were writing the story, because realize it's different. It's a difference between saying it on TV and in a story to how it registers with people. Because on TV, you're talking about a 15-second, you know, sound clip or 15-second sentence. In print, if you're starting off and you're saying, like, hey, Joe Mazzulla, he played here, he coached here, he's been in the NBA here, 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 and here. But things haven't always been as smooth. In his past, he was this and this, blah, 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 blah. Maybe you say, okay, well, this is how, you know, since then, there have been no incidents, and this is what other people have to say about this dude. It gives you a little more room to put all of that information together. TV does not allow you the opportunity to do that. I'm not trying to excuse if people think that she was wrong for bringing it in, but just to explain and give sort of a fuller 64,000 foot view of it.
Do you think they would have done this with Rachel Nichols?
I do, because as Van said, like, I think, and look, Rachel has caught, when she was in that seat, she caught her share of social media flack. I'm sure
they got her the fuck up out of there. Yeah.
Essentially, she caught her share. So I think if she, you know, much to Van's point, if she's a white woman who says this about a black coach with her platform, that's going to raise the same kind of hell. I guess the part in our community that we need to talk openly and honestly about, you know, none of us are going to go through life mistake free. You know, we're all one decision away from, as you said, Van, having our Wikipedia pages read something else. Totally different. I've certainly made my share of mistakes as well. But as a community, we have to be able to put certain things on the table without everybody being called a sellout or a mammy. Like, we just got to get past that, right? And listen, I fully am making room for the fact there are definitely some people in our community who deserve that label. But they deserve that label for a long track record of things. And so suddenly, you know, people trying to say Malika the new stage deal, I'm just like, y'all don't even know her. Like, I know Malika, okay? I know Malika since she was a reporter at the Chicago Tribune. I know Stephen A. Smith. I've known Stephen A. Smith for 20 years. So I can, you know, say both within that dynamic of what looks like contentiousness. I'm sure Stephen A. was not like, let me figure out how to knock this woman down a peg or two. But the fact that so many people are reveling in that dynamic is just weird behavior. And unfortunately, it just shows kind of the price you pay if you are a black woman in that position. And Lord forbid you have a critical word for a black man, because I went through this whole thing with Floyd Mayweather bringing up his domestic violence stuff. Oh my God. That's why I was like, yeah, this is like wash, rinse, repeat all over again. And the level of the Floyd stans, they up there in terms of top five worst. Up there.
Do you know what the interesting thing about Stephen A. Smith, though, is that he does have a track record of being less than cordial or appropriate when discussing women on First Take. He does. Like, remember, like they suspended him back in the day because they suspended him back in the day when he intimated that maybe you shouldn't provoke an athlete into hitting you. This was based after the Ray Rice situation, and he got in trouble. So it's just interesting that like that wasn't brought into this debate. I'm not saying that Stephen A. Smith has a problem with relating to women. I'm saying that I could easily connect those two things and say, hey, this is the same guy who said, I also tell my sister, don't provoke a man into abusing you, which is a fucking nuts thing to say on television. I'm sorry. I know that's your guy.
I was disappointed that he said that as well. So like, I'm not gonna at all absolve him from that comment. That was a bad moment for him, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's just, this is why sports is such a, it can be a very unwelcome space, you know, for women, because, you know, I was just going through some of the comments and it was just interesting how not only was there cheering in terms of knocking Malika down a peg or two, but it was a whole lot of, this is why women don't belong in sports. And who is she to, even with Kendrick Perkins, who is she to challenge Kendrick Perkins and Richard Jefferson? And she's never played and all this kind of stuff and all that noise that most of us who are in the game have heard that our entire fucking careers. Like, that's not a new insult, my man. It's not new. I've heard that shit my whole fucking career. I know I didn't play. I got it. Okay? I didn't black out at that time. I was in the NFL and fucking missed it. I already know. Okay? and I'm like, yo, but, you know, as I often say to them, your ass didn't play either. You feel very comfortable telling me how to do my job, and you yelling at your TV acting like you know more than Patrick Mahomes too. So I guess we both in the same boat, but the difference is I'm actually getting paid to give my opinion and your ass ain't. So it's what it is. Don't get me started.
I love it. By the way, we are going to, I want to, Jamel has an amazing book coming out later on. We haven't got a chance to read it yet because it doesn't come out for a little while. We're going to have her back on the show to talk about the book, but we wanted to just real quick plug the book. You got to get as much out there as you can.
My fellow memoir buddy in the struggle, like, you got to plug the book as much as possible. It's called Uphill. If they show video of this, you can see it right behind me. Got the copy strategically placed. And it's out October 25th, available for pre-order now, wherever books are sold. And I won't even hold y'all up. And I'm sure, Van, you had the same idea as well. It's like, I'm trying to make the New York Times bestselling this. So I need y'all to buy the fucking book.
Buy the book. Y'all always talk about how down y'all are for the cause, and then y'all be go buy the book.
That's it.
Go buy the book. Buy the fucking book. All right, now look. We gotta let you go. Thank you for the insight.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. If you had advice for Malika Andrews that you could give her right now, last question I'll ask you, what would be your advice? Because I'm sure it must not be easy seeing your name trending, seeing people bring up your personal life, seeing people call you a bed wench, butter biscuits, the whole nine.
Biscuit eater.
biscuit eater, the whole nine. What would your advice to Malika Andrews be?
Well, my advice would be for her is just to do what she can to protect her peace. You sort of have to wall yourself off from it and have even more faith and confidence that you're doing the job that you were supposed to do. And I would also tell her that this is the ebbs and flows that you go through. Those same people who are blowing up her mentions now, calling her all those names and criticizing her, pushing their own anti-Black agenda, since everybody got an agenda, pushing that on her, that all those people in 3 months will either have forgotten about it or be like, oh, Malika's great. You know, this is part of the territory that people love you 1 minute and they hate you the next. Mm-hmm. So you can't get emotionally invested in either side of it. right? And so, because you have to know that one day it'll disappear and people will find something else to fuck with you about. And you just have to have this really unshakable confidence that you are doing what you're supposed to do. Because all the people talking shit about you cannot do what you do.
Yeah, word up. That's Jemele Hill. Jemele Hill is Unbothered. Is on Spotify. You guys, we got to get Jemele some Brussels sprouts.
Oh hell no!
We got to get Jemele. We got to get Jemele some Brussels sprouts.
When I come back, because maybe we could. Because I think we might be doing that in person. We might be.
That's gonna be in person. Brussels sprouts taste test.
Have some Brussels sprouts for me.
We gonna do it.
Oh, because Brussels sprouts are the devil's food. That's why. No, like, only communists like Brussels sprouts.
I'll make some. I'll make you some.
Nah, that's not what we're going to do. That's not what we're going to
do. We're going to go
with the sure thing. All right, Jemele, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Bye-bye. Okay, Rachel, Hurricane Ian is really battering Florida. So triggering for me. Have you seen any of the footage coming out from?
No, I mean, it's almost unreal, right? Like you see it and you're like, is this actually happening? And to hear the stories of, you know, like I watch the coverage, but I try not to watch too much of the coverage because it just becomes, it's so sad to see people's homes underwater, their cars, all their belongings. I mean, people on top of roofs, people trying to save animals. It's just, and I was listening to the mayor of St. Petersburg talk today, and he was really giving a warning about, well, first he was saying how, you know, it's been nice to see that, you know, the way that politicians in Florida have been approaching this, or people, you know, who have the power to do things are being very bipartisan with this, because they're realizing so many people are suffering. So many people are going to be displaced. And you know, of course, they're also talking about how it's after the storm passes through that it's really dangerous because people don't have power. Power lines are down, you know, water's everywhere. You don't really, can't really assess the damage and see everything. And there's just so much danger lurking in the waters. But he also talks about climate change and kind of a wake up call of people really need to pay attention because what's happening is so devastating, but it's not just a one-off. And if each person doesn't do their individual part to take care of what's, you know, what they can do for the climate to try to stop these things from happening or be a better person when it comes to taking care of, you know, the environment. This is just the beginning of it, is what he was saying, which I thought was interesting. I mean, he was on Morning Joe, so it made sense to, I guess, have that conversation.
Well, I don't think it's actually the beginning. I think we're past the beginning. These storms are getting more aggressive. I guess I can understand at the beginning of the entire shift is what they're saying. And I remember even when Katrina came through Florida, it weakened. Then it hit the Gulf and it was like just on steroids. The water was so warm in the Gulf always that a storm really, really gathers a lot of steam. And, you know, as we see these waters rise or in temperature, we're going to see more storms that are incredibly intense, and that once every 3 to 4 year storm is going to become a once every year storm, and then that once every 3 to 4 year storm is going to become even more of a mammoth and a behemoth than it already is. You know, it's so exhausting sometimes litigating the merits of climate change. It seems like something you shouldn't have to do. And it's just like this sinking feeling when you look at everybody down there. When you think about people dying of politics, you know, and if you do any history, you know that politics is probably the leading cause of death in human history, you know, at least civilized human history. So, you know, and I don't want to bleed too much over into that, but I do want to let people know that on our social media, we're going to have up resources where you can help out, because the people that this truly affects are, I saw this one video with a guy and his McLaren was floating in the water. Did you see that?
I saw that.
Okay. All due respect to McLaren float dude. I bet he's going to be okay. That sucks that your McLaren is floating in the water, but McLaren float guy is going to be just fine. Unless He won the lottery and then went out and bought, put all of his money into McLaren. He doesn't have any insurance. Then he's fucked. But like McLaren float guy is going to be okay.
Well,
but and this is what I mean to say by that. What I mean to say is, as much as that sucks, there are people that aren't going to be able to replace cars that aren't McLarens. We're talking about cars that they're not stunting in, cars that they need to get from point A to point B, and those are the people who are going to need a lot of help in the aftermath of Hurricane Ian. I'm not minimizing what McLaren guy is going through. I'm not. I'm just saying we have to keep our minds on the fact that with sometimes people lose everything and they can't replace it.
Yeah, I mean, that video of him posting or wherever it got, I saw it on somebody else's site, posting that doesn't, we have no idea what the backstory is. We have no idea what else they lost. We have no idea how else this affected him. So I'm like cautious in saying like, okay, that guy's going to be okay, because we don't know what the rest of the story is behind
that. I'm betting that if he has a McLaren, he's going to be okay from the McLaren.
Anybody that has been affected by this, whether they're driving a McLaren or something a lot less than, it's devastating. It really
look
is.
At Rachel sticking up for the rich. I really thought you were Miss Revolution. I really thought,
you're enjoying this so much.
Look at Rachel.
Not.
Let them eat cake, Lindsay over here.
No, you just have no idea what people lost. And it's always weird to me to be here. We are, you know, in California. It's a beautiful day. The weather's nice. We're sitting here podcasting. And then like literally on the other side of the country, people have lost everything. It's just such a weird feeling. So it's weird to talk about. It's hard to even comprehend. This is happening in your very own country. For those people who did ask me, family in Florida is safe. Thank you for asking that. And okay. Van, I was sitting down last night, really excited because a new season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City was starting. There's a lot. Before I just go into the topic, I got to get you to sit down and watch just one franchise. It's got to be Potomac or Atlanta, because that's where we live. Yeah. But I got to get you into one of them. I actually think you would really enjoy it and be entertained by all the mess. But Salt Lake City's coming back and there's a lot of drama surrounding it, a lot of rumors that have been circulating. So I was very eager that the premiere was finally here. And then as I'm sitting watching it, I get an alert on my phone that we lost Coolio. Coolio passed away. It was a sudden and shocking death. He had just performed last week in Texas on stage doing his thing. The statement came from his talent manager, Sheila Finnegan, who said, quote, "We are saddened by the loss of our dear friend and client Coolio, who passed away this afternoon." Further went on to say, "He touched the world with the gift of his talent and will be missed profoundly. Thank you to everyone worldwide who has listened to the music and to everyone who has been reaching out regarding his passing. Please have Coolio's loved ones in your thoughts and prayers." Van,
life
your
will
thoughts?
Live. Life will live. Gone too soon. Rachel, I'm going to give you the opportunity. 59 years old. It says here 59. Had some amazing. So I'm gonna give you the opportunity to walk back the notion that Coolio's death interrupted the beginning.
You misinterpreted
Donnie,
that whole thing.
Donnie, jump in. Didn't it sound a little bit like, but Donnie, see,
okay,
he's laughing.
Didn't
it sound just,
did
I know
I
that's
use
not what
the
you
word
meant.
Interrupted?
I know. That's not what you meant, but why is Donnie laughing? Didn't it sound a little bit like, Donnie, go ahead and tell her.
The point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell her.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to this. First of all, did the lights go out of your room?
The lights just went out. That was cool.
The Conrad.
That was Coolio. No, it felt like it didn't feel like it in the moment, but retroactively looking back on it, it felt like
you do that. No, the point was I was looking forward to this the whole night, and then I was like, had such joy sitting out and watching it. And then I was sad when I got the alert that Coolio passed away. That's the point of the whole conversation. Like I was in one mood and then that changed my mood. I was really sad to see that he passed at such a young age. That was the point. Put a poll out there. Thought Warriors, Soulless Jackals. Did you really think I was saying that Coolio's death interrupted?
I don't think we need a poll. I want to make sure that we're clear.
That's the thing. Van just gave you the opportunity to clean it up. To clear it up so that there's like no confusion.
So there's no way that anybody could think, you know what I mean? Because we were talking about Coolio and you started off with the Real Housewives, which, by the way, it's not the only time you did that because we talked about the Real Housewives before. So it's like, it's top of mind. Yeah.
It changed my mood. I was affected by seeing that he passed away. So suddenly I was like, whoa, Coolio? And Donnie, you got in his head, which you're probably going to get in everybody else's head listening to this, because Donnie said he was fine. And then you brought that up and he was like, oh, well, maybe it does sound like that.
Here's the deal. This is what I'll say. It's hard to describe for people who don't really know just how big Coolio was in the mid 90s. Like, Coolio was the man. I don't think so, because I think we're looking at Gangster's Paradise, right? But I'm talking about Fantastic Voyage. Come on, y'all, let's take a ride. Don't you say a word, just get inside. We about to take on another kind of kid, because you can't have the hop if you don't have the hit. Grab your gat with the extra clip and... Like, that was my shit. Kick it. Yeah, that's the ticket. Ain't no bloods. Ain't no cripping. Ain't no fools in the party set tripping. Everybody got a stack and it ain't no crack. And it really doesn't matter if you're white or black. I loved Coolio. It was upbeat, life affirming rap, but not always. He had a song called Too Hot where he remade, I think it was a Cool in the Gang song? What's the Too Hot? Who made the original Too Hot? So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, a Cool in the Gang song where the song was actually about like sexually transmitted diseases. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And then of course he hits big with one of the biggest records in the history of hip hop. Coolio gives us Gangster's Paradise from the goddamn Dangerous Minds soundtrack, which, by the way, the song Gangster's Paradise is a character in Dangerous Minds. They Neil dropped the song so many times. We did a rewatchables, Dangerous Minds, Shay Serrano, Bill Simmons, and myself. And the song plays so much. It's a character in there. Huge record. Won a Grammy for the record. Gigantic record. Should have won Best Original Song at the Academy Awards, if you're asking me. Okay? Coolio just... a fun, incredible talent, grew up in the streets of Los Angeles, took all of that, parlayed it into an amazing rap career, gone at 59. We're losing our legends too early. I see people like BitBoy playing with a goddamn owl. I see Redman skydiving. I see the rest of these brothers. I see Andre 3000 playing the flute. I want the soft life for our brothers in hip hop, brothers and sisters in hip hop. I want the soft life after they've put the mic down. I want to see them live long, long, fruitful lives, because we've lost a lot of them. Lost Biz, we lost Doom, you know what I'm saying? We lost Coolio, we lost X. You know, I want to see these brothers take care of themselves. And that, it was sad when I saw that Coolio had passed away, man. Rest in peace to Coolio. Really made his mark, man. Really made a billion views on YouTube. Gangster's Paradise. A song that came out in goddamn, was it 96?
1996.
Still did a billion views, man. Come on, man.
It's Coolio. Such a crossover song, too.
Like, give me as much Gangster's Paradise as you can give me right now, Rachel. Give me as much as you can give me. Come on. Come on, Rachel.
I'm ready.
Go.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life.
realize there's nothing like there's nothing left because I've been laughing and blasting so long that even my mama thinks I'm a thing. But I ain't never killed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk. You know that's unheard of.
You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking.
Or you and your homies will be lined in chalk. I really hate the trip, but I got a lope. A legend, man. A legend. Like, we have to, because I'm getting so much joy from Coolio, but he's not here. We have to start doing something where we just pick a legend and celebrate them so they could see it and feel it and get these hugs, man, and get these flowers.
Yeah. And people like your homeboy ain't calling him Dusty.
All right, now. Can I talk about that, though, for a second? Okay. Sure. So, obviously, academics said that some of the hip-hop founders are dusty. Okay? Let's talk about this for a second. And I really mean something here when I say this. Obviously, we would want younger brothers in hip-hop to speak better when they're talking about their elders and people who have paved the way. Because that's just basic respect. See, there's two different... And this kind of relates to the Coolio thing. There's basic respect that we want to have for people who've paved the way in anything that we're doing, right? There's basic respect for our elders, okay? There's basic respect for people who have sacrificed and paved the way. And then there's like cultural respect and all of that stuff. All right. There's something else there, though. I don't really thought about what Axe said, okay? What I thought about was the fact that Ack represents something there. He represents a very specific programming that comes from mainstream hip hop. And the programming is, and I don't mean that, I'm not about to be a guy that blame hip hop for this, but the programming is very specific. It's like there are very specific markers to being a successful hip hop mainstream character. One of them is money. The other one is influence. Then you got women. Then you got, so I would say, money, women, power. And I mean, now, even the quality of music kind of is not even as big a deal as it used to be, right?
For sure. And the image,
right? And the kids think that everybody that's trying to get clout and everybody that's trying to be lit and everybody that'll do whatever they have to do to make a buck and everybody that'll do whatever they have to do to get noticed, they think that because that's what we told them. So we told them, and when I say we, I mean, I grew up listening to rap music that said, if you ain't got the change, you ain't shit. If you broke, you ain't shit. Like broke boys don't deserve no pussy. I know that's right. Like all of that stuff, like that's on both sides of it, right? Like we have put, so when he sees them and he sees somebody that literally sat in their basement digging through records and creating an art form, whether or not you could rap or whether or not you could do all of that stuff, that don't matter to some of these kids. Like what matters to them is what do you have to show for it? And I think that attitude culturally is rat poison, and that needs to be litigated and discussed way past what Axe said. How we view and value people, you know what I mean? How we view and value people, and how our culture takes care of its elders. Obviously, Charlamagne said some of this, but I'll tell you something like that. I'll tell you, like, the Rolling Stones are etched in youth. Like, they're 70 some years old, but they're really not. Mick Jagger right now is the same age he was in 1967.
Sure.
And that's because the music and the songs are timeless. Hip hop is so, it's so stuck in like, it's like right now, could Jay-Z have a tour as big as the Rolling Stones performing records from 2000, 2001, 2002? Probably not. Because we look at aging in this a little bit different. So we have to look at the longevity of this culture and the longevity of these guys like Coolio and like X so they don't burn out. And I'm not just talking about burning out in terms of passing away. I'm talking about how do we take care of them? And everybody's been talking about how do we take care of them and how do we honor them? Because all too often we forget about them. And a lot of the hip hop guys in their 40s that you see carrying on Instagram right now, a lot of the ones you see getting involved in every single different cause, going viral for doing stupid shit. A lot of them that's trying all of these wacky ass new careers, that's doing all of this stuff, they're afraid you guys are going to forget about them. That's what they're afraid of. Like, they're scared that one day they're going to be looked at as the old dusty guy because they spent a career telling you that the old dusty guy sucked. Pac said it, nigga looking like Larry Holmes, flabby and sick. What was Larry Holmes? An old champion past his prime. There's no greater sin in hip hop than being past your prime. And I was actually shocked that so many people were surprised that he had that outlook. Of course they feel like that. Of course, like we told them, like we told them, the OGs in hip hop told them that in order to be the man, to be a man, the dude, that nigga, there were certain things you had to have. And if you look at somebody, like, I don't give a fuck that you were spinning records in the park, 1977, and you gave, I don't give a fuck about that. You ain't got no chain. You don't have no IG model. You ain't got no cool car. Boom, you out. And like,
I feel like that's not what academics was saying. I feel like I missed all of that.
Well, no, I mean, he wouldn't say it that way. I would, but so, okay, like, I was so like,
I get everything you're saying. I'm like, but he was more so talking about, from what I gathered, that he was talking about, like, you're not reaching down and helping. You keeping all this wealth and knowledge to, or not even wealth, but just this knowledge to yourself about how to navigate this. And you're not passing it down to these young folks. They're making the same mistakes that you guys did back in the day, or maybe they didn't, but they're making these mistakes now. And you're not passing down the knowledge. Like, well, that's
what he said after. The first thing that he said is, every time I see one of these hip hop legends and pioneers, they look old and dusty to me. And that part of it is the part that a lot of people clip. Now, the reasons why they're old and dusty is he's saying that there's a cycle of usury that exists in our culture that we are having trouble breaking away from. That's obviously true. But the reality is, we've criminalized being broke. We talked about this when we talked about the PNB Rock situation. We've criminalized being broke, or in some way not having, not being able to wear all your wealth on your chest in certain pockets of the culture. Obviously, it's not all like this, but in certain pockets of the culture, we've criminalized that, right? Like, we watching videos, people in the club, like fucking streamers or whatever the fuck it is, the sparklers coming through. You got to be that or you ain't shit.
Right,
so obviously obviously he's going to feel that way. And so if you care about what he said, man, if you care about what he said, go somewhere right now and tell Kool Herc how much he mean to you. Like if you care about what he said, you know, go somewhere right now, you know, and dig up one of the guys from the old school, like Kumo D or Big Daddy Kane, you know, DMC and Rev Run are still here. Like, tell those guys how much they mean to you, or better yet, buy a ticket, go out and support them, because they still trying to get money off their music right now. So we can take care of these people, but it's not going to be with bad feelings and fuck people who say shit like that. Now, he was wrong to say it, and he said it in a very disrespectful way. You got to But the point remains, man. Speaking to PNB Rock, this looks like this could be a fucking family hit.
This is wild.
A 17-year-old has been arrested as the shooter, and the second suspect has been identified as the guy's fucking dad. The 17-year-old was the shooter. The dad was driving the getaway car. Speaking of teaching the youth the wrong fucking thing, this is what I'm talking about. He's suspected of being the shooter, and both the father and the son were in the parking lot of Roscoe's. Apparently, they saw PNB Rock come in. The getaway car was driven by the older guy. This gentleman's name is Freddie Lee Trone. And a 32-year-old woman named Chantel Trone was arrested and booked as an accessory to murder in connection with PNB Rock's death. I don't know what to say. This is one of the saddest, most fucked up commentaries on some of the ill parts of what it is that we're talking about. One of the worst things I've seen in a long time, man.
Well, and the woman whose name is Accessory, she shares her same last name. I don't know how she fits all into this, but she seems like she's a relative as well.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
I was shocked when I saw this, because when I saw this rolled out, I just saw the picture of the old man. I had no idea his son was the shooter. I had no idea he had a son that was involved. And now we see that this woman who's clearly related to them as well was involved too. Yeah, this is... I'm sure the more that time goes on and we find out more details, it's just going to be sadder and sadder. Yeah. Obviously, this should have never happened.
But the challenge to a lot of brothers and the OGs in the game, and I'm not painting everybody with the same brush. You know, the responsibility that we have, and this is a father failing his son. This is a father failing his son, if this is true. Allegedly, this is a father failing his son. For what? For the chain on the neck of another brother. God do better, man. God do better. We have to talk about this stuff more as well. Did you watch the Dahmer show?
I can't get into it. I started it. You know, I hear people like you talk about it was so good. So I was like, let me sit down, let me watch this. It's a tough watch for me, but I also just don't like it.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It's very difficult to watch. I'm not going to lie. It made me very angry.
So I haven't finished it. Yeah.
Made me very angry. I finished it. Yeah, made me very, very angry. Very angry. The Dahmer show is in a lot of ways sensationalist, but in a lot of ways it is a scathing indictment of a failure of systems and the minimization of Black people and their fears in America. And this was my era, like when it was 92 when all of this stuff was going down. And so it was the biggest thing on television. It's all over Geraldo, all over, you know, all of that stuff. But it's so much deeper than even I remember as a kid, you know?
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something?
No, I'm listening.
Well, I do find it interesting, the discourse around it all, because, you know, even I lived in Milwaukee for 3 years. People still talk about it. But I have not seen something, and there's been a lot on Jeffrey Dahmer, but I had not seen it told from this angle, at least to my knowledge. Like, it is, I'm sure it's out there in some form, but I had not seen it told from, I guess, seeing how these systems had failed, seeing Niecy Nash play the neighbor, seeing how there were multiple complaints, seeing how there were missing pictures up of young Black men, seeing that he was terrorizing this neighborhood, living amongst them. I hadn't really seen it from that. And so, because when I saw that this was coming out, it's like, why do we need another one of these? That really was my thought. Why do we need to see this again? I understand true crime. I like to watch true crime as well. I'm not in it like that, where I'm listening to podcasts and reading books and stuff, but I understand the fascination with it. But we see Dahmer's been told so many times, Ted Bundy's been told so many times. We almost seem to sensationalize these serial killers in such a way where they're celebrities, even after they've died, they've passed away. But I did find it interesting from up to the part that I watched that this told it from a side I had not seen before, and almost as if it was to shame the police system, to shame the way that they treated the Black people in that community and the way they handled this case. They fumbled the case.
Jeffrey Dahmer should have been caught so many times.
It's like,
what are you going to say? It's like what?
What we talked about with the young woman, where they didn't believe her story. And then somebody ended up dying. She was sexually assaulted. And then somebody ended up, he ended up murdering the next person.
Black woman. And it's still happening.
Black woman.
Yeah. You know, you have a Black lady living next door to him. Is that the police in the thing? A young man escaped, 14-year-old man escaped Jeffrey Dahmer, who's drugged and incoherent. His next door neighbor and her niece and daughter tell the police, hey, don't you need to take this boy? Dahmer comes to the police. This is a true thing. It says, hey, this guy's my boyfriend. They let him take the kid back upstairs. He's 14 years old, and then he kills him. Those cops which I wouldn't research this. Those cops were put on administrative leave and got their jobs back after. They show that in the show. One of the guys later on became the president of the police union.
No.
One of those two officers in the Dahmer situation became the president of the police union. Not only did he not use his job, he fed a 14-year-old kid to a fucking serial killer. And he still failed up. You gotta fucking be kidding me about this shit. He still failed up. Hmm. Boosie says we shouldn't watch it. Play the audio, Donnie.
Us as blacks, we need to ban this Jeffrey Dahmer movie. This is some sick shit. What he did to our race. This is some sick shit. We need to boycott this damn movie off Netflix. This is sick. This is sick. That the victim family should be getting paid off every dollar Netflix made. Okay. This is fucking sick.
Okay. So that cop's by the name, if you want to look that up, that cop's name is John Balserzak. John Balserzak is one of the two cops. He ended up becoming the president of the police union down there. Boosie's probably mad because of the gay stuff, you know.
Yeah. Boosie's I'm actually shocked he didn't say. I was shocked he said it, and then I was like, let me just think about this for a second. Boosie being on the right side of things.
I'll be honest with you. He's not wrong here in terms of. I wonder what making, because when I'm seeing a lot of Jeffrey Dahmer shit that's inappropriate. I'm seeing people. Rick Ross said he wants a pair of Jeffrey Dahmer glasses. I saw somebody else from a different podcast use a poster of one of the podcast hosts as Jeffrey Dahmer for a joke. You know, this guy killed 17 people. And I think when you bring somebody into the cultural lexicon like this, it gets put in the bucket of all being entertainment. So there is a certain, it does in a way make this less serious in a way when we start to be entertained by it. Myself included. Yeah.
For sure. And so I would say that, yes, for once he's halfway on the right side of it, but I think that the message needs to be redirected. It's not about boycotting it. It's about focusing on these people who actually were real victims and affected by it. And every single time you sensationalize or put something out in the form of media for entertainment value, you don't realize the impact that you're having on these victims who are still alive, who have to relive this situation. Nothing's done for them. They aren't warned when it comes out. There's a really interesting LA Times article about it. The families have no idea that this is coming out for pure entertainment until the rest of us find out, until they watch a trailer. They're not notified. They're not questioned. They're not compensated. Nothing. Especially, you know, the viral clip of the young Black woman who has a breakdown which I never knew about, has a breakdown
that is burned into my memory as a kid. Jeffrey, I hate you, Jeffrey. Don't fuck with me. Burned into my memory as a kid. I remember seeing that.
And wearing the shirt. That kind of stuff. And it's going viral and they're watching it for, again, entertainment. But how hard is it for that woman and her family to relive that over and over again? They finally feel like, okay, I can move on. And this is what the article talks about. And then another thing comes out and their phone is ringing. People, you know what I mean? It's like they have to relive it all over again. So I would say that Boosie's message, yes, is clear or is right to a point, but we need to refocus on the people who actually are suffering and not entertained when this kind of stuff comes out.
Donnie, it's time. I've heard you guys. I've heard you. I've heard your call. The call of the wild. Okay. I've heard your call. You guys want to know what I think about Sneaky Mountain Lion. Okay. Rachel, did you see the video?
I did.
Security camera video from September 2021 in Ojai, California, an amazing little spa town up near Santa Barbara. A man jogs past full-grown mountain lion, doesn't even see mountain lion. Mountain lion is hiding behind a bush, just looks at the guy jog, and the guy runs right past him. When we first started this podcast, I told you that you never knew, because the sneaky, wily, beautiful, amazing, majestic mountain lion is out there. Is this not, one question for you, a perfect example of what I was talking about when I'm talking about mountain lion?
Man, it's terrifying. You realize that I don't hide. Because of you, there isn't a bush, a hill that I don't really look at. And when I, ever since we started this conversation about mountain lion, where I'm like, there could be one. I don't have a stick. I'm always thinking of what would I do if something happens to me. You have, yes, Van, you have succeeded in ruining something that people in LA love to do. You have ruined this for me as a newcomer to Los Angeles. And seeing a video like this, I mean, that guy has no idea.
No clue.
And still might not.
He doesn't. He that dude doesn't know.
Now, that dude has no idea. Is this an ignorance is bliss situation? Would you want to be this guy who continues to enjoy their morning runs, and unbeknownst to them, Mountain Lion is watching?
I never want to know.
As long as it never touches you, you never want to know.
I don't want to know.
I agree.
I never want to know. If I'm that guy, I never want to know.
Which is why it is so infuriating that you have ruined the experience for me.
I'm trying to help
you. See what I'm saying? You never want to know. No. I didn't need your help. I never want to know.
But you know what? We have to remember, though. We have to remember that mountain lion is not the enemy. Look at this beautiful. I love him. Look at this beautiful.
It just came to me.
What?
Oh my gosh, when I saw that picture. Do you know that during my entire childhood, I had a picture of mountain lions over my bed? And I just remembered that until you said it. I'll try to find a picture of it.
That's why you were probably pushing it deep, deep, deep down when I first brought this up.
It just came back to me.
Yeah.
It just came back.
Rachel, could you please introduce this Peak White Mess segment, because this is one of the most interesting ones we've ever done.
Is it? Wait, the first one?
Yeah, the first one. Yeah.
All right. So we've been getting a lot of Peak White Mess lately. Really interesting topics when it comes to the Peak White Mess. And for Van, this is one of the most interesting. I would not put it in that category. To me, it's one of the most disturbing. Somebody who we can't seem to get enough of in the media, but we should. Somebody who keeps making the rounds that we really should let go of is Rachel Dolezal. And she's back in the news. And this time, maybe not for what you think it might be. But she's back in because her OnlyFans pictures have leaked. Now, if you don't remember Rachel Dolezal, I don't know how you could not. She's a former white NAACP chapter president who made headlines a few years ago when she claimed that she identifies as Black. Well, now she has an account and she has some pictures that have gone viral, multiple pictures. As she's 44 years old, not really an issue. She's 44 years old, fine. But she's showing off her Savage X Fenty lingerie. Van, you're the one who finds this so interesting. What might be so interesting about it to you? By the way, you can subscribe to her page for $9.99.
No. Okay, first of all, a couple of things. This is wrong that people have leaked Rachel Dolezal's OnlyFans. This is wrong.
Agree. Should never do it.
So first of all, leaking somebody's OnlyFans, this is supposed to be paid for content. This is wrong that they leaked Rachel Dolezal's OnlyFans. Okay. This is interesting because it's another salvo in the Rachel Dolezal conversation. And I gotta be honest with you. I know I say that too much, but the Rachel Dolezal situation has never been as cut and dry as people wanted to make it seem.
Why?
Because there's always a gray area. Logically. So Rachel Dolezal said that she identified as Black.
Yes.
How do we know that she didn't? Like, how do we... I don't think
that's the question or issue that people had. She might do that.
Right. So I guess my thing is, so Rachel Dolezal, she went to Howard, NAACP, all of that stuff, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes. She feels black.
Says that she's Black. Don't we have to just go, okay, cool, you're Black?
No. I mean, because this can't continue.
Well, I agree, but at the same time, it seems as if we're a little picky or a little bit, I don't really know the science behind that. I don't know the science behind anything. All I know is that I try to be supportive of people when they identify as something. Now, look, I do. Absolutely.
So you support her.
Not really. I don't. But what I'm saying is, like, if you come to me right now and tell me that you identify as a different gender or you identify, like, I'm going to support whatever it is that you say that you identify. I want you to be able to live your best self, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems like it, for me personally, it seems like I'm a little bit hypocritical if I only do it when it's not an affront to me. See, Rachel Dolezal saying that she identifies as being Black, it's an affront to me because there's a shared trauma and pain and experience that goes along with being Black that I don't feel like you can opt into. It's not that I don't want you to be Black because being Black is awesome. It's like, I don't want you to be Black because you can't just turn on everything I've had to deal with. But at the same time, I don't know how that logic jives with some of the other things that we discuss. You know what I mean? And it's not a one-to-one. It's not a one-to-one. But I feel like if she says she's Black, I kind of got to, like, not give a fuck about it and not make it a big deal. She's appropriating. Go ahead.
Anybody who says that they feel Black doesn't know what it means to be Black. That's not black. No.
But what if someone says I feel like a woman? Then are you as a woman, can you then say to them, hey, well, you don't really know what it feels like to be a woman. I'm a woman. I can tell you what it feels like to be a woman. You don't know what it feels like to be a woman.
So here's the thing.
What they're gonna tell you is, I know what it feels like to be a woman because I am a woman.
Yeah. They feel like they're a woman, and then they go through the actual change of being a woman.
Not all the time. At all. Not all the time. Like, sometimes, but not all the time. So by the way, you guys, this is a sixth grade conversation. Please give some grace. I'm not comparing the two things in function. I'm comparing the two things societally. I'm not comparing the two things in function. Functionally, I'm not saying that, hey, this is the same as this, because gender and sexuality and all of that stuff is so complicated, right? It's so complicated that it gets down to almost theoretical levels. You know, it's so complicated, right? It's very, very nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
Race is a social construct that we've made for the purposes of racism. There is gray area to Rachel Dolezal's claim that she's Black. There's just, to me, there is. It's annoying, but it's true. And even in this situation, Rachel Dolezal is out there.
I would want to know why she feels Black. See, like, I need to, she says it, she identifies. So what my question to her would be, if she was sitting right here, why specifically do you identify as Black? If I heard that, then I could answer her more specifically. That's what I would need to hear. Is it because you say you went to an all-Black school or HBCU? Is it because you are in the NAACP and then became the president and led it? Is it because you took a certain number of African-American studies classes? Is it because you lived in Africa for a certain time? I don't even know if she has, I'm just saying. I would want to know specifically, what, why do you identify as Black? Because it's not a lifelong thing for you. It didn't start that way for you.
Well.
So what was the, oh, she said she was born Black? What'd she say?
She claims that for as long, I'm looking at it right now, she claims for that as long as she can remember, she always felt like she wasn't white. Now, she also has said that she's Native American. But
okay, see, you just discredited her already.
But look, all of the stuff that she's done in the NAACP and all of the African American study stuff, that's because she feels
she's
Black.
An ally. It's because she's an ally. I understand what you're saying. And I definitely see the argument being made of the gray area. But mm-hmm. But then you just threw in there that she says she's Native American. Like,
She was raised by fundamentalist Christians in the foothills of Rocky Mountain. She said from an early age, she describes being fascinated with Africa and African-American culture. When she was a teenager, her parents adopted 4 African-American teachers. And she says, while I was teaching my siblings about Black culture, I began to feel even more connected to it myself. I began to see the world through Black eyes, and anything that had to do with Blackness or Africa always grabbed my attention. Look, I'm not saying that I'm not offended by Rachel Dolezal, because I am. I'm just saying, it's great.
What's the term? I can't think of it off the top of my head, where it's in your blood and you feel a certain way because trauma exists, like it's in your DNA. It's called something. I think it's part of the E. It's called something where, like, the trauma that your ancestors dealt with, it's in your DNA, it's in your blood. And so it's the reason that today in 2022, you feel a certain way because of the trauma that your ancestors felt. Rachel don't have that. It's called something.
Sound like some Dr. Umar shit. Shout out to Doc. Sound like some Umar shit. Like, you feel it.
Epigenetics. Yeah.
Thank you. That's exactly what it's called. Epigenetics. That's exactly what it is.
Okay. She definitely don't have that. She ain't Black. But it's just interesting, the grace. And even in this, so everyone's making fun of what happened to her was wrong. Yeah, sure. Rachel Dolezal has an OnlyFans. It looks as if that Rachel Dolezal is doing yet another thing to draw attention to herself. I personally believe that if she leaked her own OnlyFans, which I know a lot of people think that she did, that that's wrong. But if they took her OnlyFans pictures and put them out there,
it's wrong.
Then they're kind of victimizing Rachel Dolezal again. I feel like
again,
we should have been...
Again?
I'm telling you.
Again?
I'll be honest with you. I feel like we should have at least been willing to have the conversation.
Get her on the podcast.
I feel like we should have at least be able to have the conversation. Because once again...
I'm going to take a sick day.
I want to give people space to identify as whatever they want to identify as. But I just want to know how do you do that? Like, I don't consider her to be Black. I don't. But I'm not going to kick her in her ass.
If she wants the space to be Black, you want to give that to her. I'm sure she's not alone. Yeah. I'm sure. Let that catch on. Let it catch on.
It's gonna be niggas everywhere. We got 3 different topics here on the nigga word. We got, I gotta play this real quick. Donnie, give me we got 3 different topics on the word nigga. White people still not learning, but I gotta let y'all hear this. This is an actual, the video, you can see it on the internet, but this is actually a salesman that comes to a Black man's house. This is caught on the Ring camera. Listen to this.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, sorry to bother you. What's up? I'm Fernando. I work at Peak Energy. We're a few doors down. We're in 1845.
Okay.
So we do solar around here. We're just coming around talking to niggers. Sorry, dude. Neighbors. I apologize, man.
I know.
No, man, that wasn't even...
Fans laughing. I think this was fake.
You do?
I do.
It could be.
I really think, and I'm surprised more people aren't talking about this. I think this was a gag.
I'm gonna be honest with you.
On social media. I don't believe it.
If it is, because if it is, then the brother who is in the sketch needs to be called before the congregation.
I do. We never see him.
Yeah.
I mean, and then, like, I guess the energy company that's in the area or that he said he worked for, like, they're like, we don't work in that area. He wasn't even wearing a shirt.
Have they said that he doesn't work for them?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then it's probably fake.
And that's when I saw it and I was like, I think this is just like Pink Solar or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They said that they don't know who this person is and he's not even wearing a shirt from their company. So yeah. I don't believe it.
You think
that.
It's fake? If it's fake, I we can't. Fake. Okay. So look, I'm all good for a good skit. Y'all, we can't do the traumatizing black people skit by having salespeople say the N-word stuff. I can't. I got to draw the line. That's bad.
But that's you a thought bad it was skit. Real.
I did. I'm willing to believe anything,
and it might
though.
Be. And it might
do you,
be.
Do you realize that, look, if you're saying that it's fake, you know, I'm willing to believe anything now when it comes to white people in the N-word. I am. There's no context in which you could tell me that a white person said the N-word and I wouldn't believe it. If someone told me right now, hey, my wife went into labor and we went over to the hospital and the baby was delivered and the doctor smacked the baby and said, oh, this nigger can take a licking. Like, I would believe that happened. I would. There's no context with white people saying the N-word I wouldn't believe. They fucked up every way you could fuck up.
So funny.
All right, mailbag. Donnie, go. Mailbag time. Time to read your letters and then we'll reply to them. Oh, it's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in.
All right. The first one is from Damar Samantra on Reddit. They ask, what is a conspiracy theory that you believe to be true?
Ooh. Rachel, you got one?
No.
I got one.
Go.
I'm willing to believe that the moon landing never happened.
I feel like I've heard you say that. Have you talked about this before?
I'm not saying that I full on believe it, but I'm willing to believe that the U.S. faked the moon landing.
Why?
Lots of reasons, man. Lots of things. Never went back to the moon. You know what I mean? Like,
what's the thing about the wind?
Politically, the wind blowing, the flag, whatever. Politically, the fact that the space race was existing simultaneously to the arms race and what that stuff did, how it allowed the United States to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars because everybody had such national pride. And I'm willing to believe that we never, I'm not saying that it's true. If for $1 million, we went to the moon. If it was $1 million on the table, but I'm willing to believe the conspiracy theory that we never went to the moon.
Mm.
You don't have one that you believe in.
Bigfoot.
I fuck with Bigfoot. I think he's real though. See, I don't even think that that's like a conspiracy theory. I think Bigfoot's real. I just don't think that we made up Bigfoot. I think that Bigfoot's out there, you know, and he was out there.
Or he was out there. That's what he was out there.
I love Bigfoot content. You ever see Harry and the Hendersons? Of course you didn't see it.
That's actually what I have seen.
Oh!
I love Harry and the Hendersons.
I love Harry and the Hendersons. Like, Harry and the Hendersons is so sad at the end when they have to make him leave and he doesn't want to leave, Harry and the Hendersons good. Like, I love Bigfoot content. So Bigfoot, okay, Bigfoot's good. Okay, another one, Daniel, come on.
All right, next one is from Danielle Frayling on Instagram. She asks, what trend went out of style that you wish came back today?
The little military things on your shoulders. Remember that? When they had the little, military things on your shoulders in like 2008, 2009. What do you call those, epaulettes or something?
I have no idea.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I just don't know what they're called.
Remember that era when we had those on your shoulders and the shirt? You don't remember that era?
Yes. No, I'm agreeing with you. I just don't remember what they were called.
I used to love those. I had several different shirts with those.
What trend? They've all come back. I keep thinking style, and I'm like, all of the style ones have come back. I can't think on questions today. I don't know.
You're failing.
Because all I can think is style, and I'm like, all the shit's come back.
I want those to
Donnie,
come back.
You have one? You want to answer
Donnie,
for
did
me?
Did you have any of those shirts?
No, I didn't. But I would like those shirts from like I feel like they are starting to come back. Shirts from like the 60s that were like tight and they were like a cotton vibe to them. It was like a collar shirt that's tight, short sleeves. I'm describing it and I'm picturing it, but I'm not describing it well.
You're describing a polo.
So what is a collar? No, let him keep going. It's a collar shirt. That's
polo.
It's a collar shirt that's
like,
tight.
You know, in the Temptations TV movie.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Those 60 style shirts.
You can wear it with a chain. Yeah.
They're polos.
Donnie,
but
I can see you rocking that.
Mad niggas wear those though. If you're an activist, you wear those shirts. That's the kind of shit that activists wear. Activists like to dress like they're from the 60s. But you know, I know what you're talking about. Like sometimes they got the little V in the front, like that. Yeah, they got the collar. Yeah, but mad people wear those though. And by the way, with your hair, that's the type of shit you should be wearing.
For sure.
Yeah, I gotta find me one or a couple.
Yeah. Now I'm gonna get you some of those. What size shirt are you, Donnie?
A medium. A good medium.
A good medium. What does a good medium mean? What's that?
Like a medium that's not too big. I'm kind of a slender guy. So and I feel like those have to be kind of form fitting.
I'm kind of a slender guy. I don't have a weight problem. I don't have flappy titties, whatever. Move on to the next one.
All right. Next one is from Cantaloupe Steve on Reddit. Cantaloupe Steve asks, what was the biggest adjustment you had to make when moving in with your partner?
Everything.
Yeah, man. Move on. Move on.
Everything.
Man. Yeah.
All right. Last one. Ty Comedy on Instagram asks, I feel like this is an easy answer.
Easy.
What's
easy
worse, bubble guts or migraine?
Bubble guts, 1,000,000%.
Bubble guts.
Migraine,
you can lose your shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, can I be honest with you? I prefer diarrhea.
But here's the thing. With like a bubble guts, it's rumbling. Diarrhea, like you got to get there fast. With a migraine, you know what I mean? Like, and you might not make it.
But let me ask you this question, though. Do you prefer diarrhea or do you prefer taking, like, a normal shit?
Is this an actual question?
Yeah. Like, well, do you prefer diarrhea or do you prefer having, like, a normal shit?
I prefer a normal boo-boo.
Donnie, what about you?
It depends.
See,
I feel like there's some kind of satisfaction when there's just a whole lot at once.
I'm telling you, you're fully eliminated. Like you feel
so disgusting,
and emptied out, right? Because when you take a regular shit, you can be like, God damn, you know, I feel like I didn't get it all, and you can feel still for like, but when you with diarrhea, all the gas, all the water, all of this is just out.
Sometimes you don't even have to push. It just comes straight out, and then you feel.
Well, I mean, like, usually you have to keep going.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When I'm not talking about the frequency here. I'm talking about the methodology of the actual going to the bathroom.
It's absolutely disgusting to me.
I prefer to be just get it all out so I could go play basketball.
It's like a rage. I mean? It's raging, and I don't like that. It's angry, and it's just aggressive.
All right. Do you have an unexpected ally of the week?
I do. My unexpected ally of the week is Marjorie Taylor Greene's husband. He has filed for divorce. And not that I wish divorce on anybody, but it's one less person supporting Marjorie Taylor Greene. And that is a win in my book.
I bet you that nigga's all kinds of racist, though.
That's why they're unexpected. Or maybe unexpected. He can't take it. Maybe he's had enough. We don't know. Irreconcilable differences. No, it's the marriage is irretrievably broken. Okay. Maybe he's had enough of her shit.
Look at this beautiful mountain lion. My unexpected ally of the week is Roger Maris Jr., who is the son of Roger Maris, who used to have the Major League Baseball single season home run record. Okay, 61 home runs. Roger Maris, 2-time AL MVP. Fantastic movie directed by Billy Crystal. Barry Pepper as Roger Maris. Thomas Jane as Mickey Mantle. The name of the movie is 61. Go watch it. Roger Maris said that Aaron Judge, who is now a Yankee that is belting his way past 61 homers, it's like he is aiming at the true home run record because Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds cheated their way to the record. Mm. I like Roger Maris and what he said because it made me go watch videos of Barry Bonds when he was a goddamn behemoth. And I had so much fun on the plane ride over watching Barry Bonds, a fucking mutant human with a twig in his hands, destroy baseballs and hit them 9,000 feet. I hadn't watched Barry in so long. He was unfucking believable. And I have no problem with it. He was unbelievable. And I hadn't thought about it. I was like, this guy talking shit about it. I went back and I watched it. Just, do you remember the year that he hit like 370? He hit like 370. All kinds of walks, fucking like 50 homers or something. They just wouldn't pitch to him. They walked a run in because Barry was waiting. He was just
crushing. And you don't care how he did it.
I don't give a fuck about that. I wish I did. I understand why I love baseball. I understand why hardcore baseball fans care about that because the numbers in baseball mean so much. So it's based around the numbers, and if you skew the numbers based on an unfair advantage, people go, ooh, whatever. I didn't give a fuck. I used to love watching them just fucking, just listen to the ball coming off the bat when Barry hit. Barry hit a ridiculous homer. You guys go watch this. Barry steps up to the plate in Yankee Stadium and just destroys a ball. Just destroys a ball out to right field. The sound of it was fucking chaotic. It was so fun to watch. So thank you, Roger Maris Jr.
What's your unexpected ally of the week?
Roger Maris Jr. is my unexpected ally of the week because in hating on Barry Bonds, he made me go watch Barry Bonds, and it was okay. A whole lot of fun. I love it. Bring back niggas who are 270 with 8% body fat that can hit the baseball 1,000 feet.
And take supplements.
That's going to do it for us. Take thin caps off, but do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
And I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.